Good morning, everybody. The Mary Griffith Show is underway at 9:16. It is the day that Cornerstone drops by. We get a little free counseling this morning from Cornerstone. And remember, of course, if you're having marital problems, if you can't deal with your teenage children, if you're having trouble with your coworkers, whatever's troubling you in your life, or if you have a child that needs help, Cornerstone is there for you. And today, Courtney Miller is here. And Courtney, we're going to be talking about children and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think they started the school year right off the bat with the MAP test, which sets the stage to see what they know. They need to assess early so they can see where people are, but nothing like a major test the first week of school or the second week of school to really get kids starting to have their anxiety pumped up. So tell us a little bit about the work you do at Cornerstone, and then we'll walk into the topic of advising parents and grandparents who are listening to this show today, how they can maybe help their children reduce anxiety.
Yeah, so I meet with both kids and parents and adults, work on a lot of anxiety-related issues, depressive symptoms.
So you do adults as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just kids who have anxiety going back to school.
Yeah.
Adults have anxiety, maybe about their kids going back to school,
yep.
or maybe about a big project they've got coming up at work, or maybe their mother-in-law's coming for Christmas. Whatever it is, you can deal with it.
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of young adults, too, with going back to college or starting college.
You know, I'm going to sound like an old lady here. I am an old lady. I remember one time when I had my first brush with anxiety, although I didn't know what it was. I got real sick in college, and I literally missed like 4 days of school.
Uh-huh.
Now, when you go to a major Big Ten university, you don't have a lot of time to make up. And I remember I missed 4 days of school, and then I went back on the fifth day, and I thought, I'm just going to drop out. I mean, I don't feel well still. Life is terrible. I'll never catch up. I mean, I think I just laid in bed for like the next day, just thinking about how hopeless my situation was. Then finally something happened and I went, well, maybe I ought to try. And the rest is history. I actually graduated. But that happened my freshman year, and I'd never had anything like that happen before.
Yeah.
Because when I went to Caring Notre Dame, number one, it was so much fun to go to school. I never wanted to miss school because that's where my friends were. I didn't care about studying, but that's where my friends were. Whereas college, you know, that was hard work. And I hadn't been sick like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And there was my mommy there to take care of me. And it really was, I mean, despair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, looking back on it, it's almost laughable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the worst thing that could happen to you when you're 18 is you miss 4 days of class. And, you know, but it doesn't matter. It was real to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we have to accept our own anxiety while, yes, compared to the Holocaust, it may not be quite as major, but it's happening to me and it's happening now.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes anxiety starts with those somatic symptoms, so we might not recognize that it's anxiety, but we have like butterflies in our stomach or we're feeling sick to our stomach. A lot of times kids, they don't have the verbiage to put like, oh, I'm feeling anxious, but they'll say like their tummy hurts or things like that. And that's a signal that maybe it's something more significant than just a flu or things like that.
The upset stomach is not always because you had a pizza.
Right.
Right. And so it is interesting that term butterflies in the stomach. I don't know when that was invented or who coined it.
Uh-huh.
But I think a lot of people think of butterflies in the stomach as good excitement, like I'm going out on a date or I'm getting ready for a promotion or it's my first day somewhere. That's kind of good.
Mm-hmm.
But that pit in your stomach, that's a different kind of feeling in your stomach. That's not always positive.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about this before, but how would you medically or scientifically label anxiety?
Well, that's a loaded question. I think anxiety is different for everyone, too, because everyone gets anxious about different things. So it's a struggle to cope. There's nerves that go along with it. And sometimes it's more of those somatic symptoms of, you know, stomach aches or headaches and not being able to concentrate and having flighty ideas and not being able to focus.
Insomnia.
Yeah, insomnia, not being able to eat. Those kinds of things.
Can I get that? I haven't had that yet. No, that, and you know, we joke about that. And that was not an appropriate joke for me to make because truly, you will see some people that have had very rapid weight loss, and that is a clear signal that something is very wrong, either medically, physically, or emotionally.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to laugh about, you know, because, again, overeating and undereating can both be signs of anxiety, depression, some other things. And anxiety is different than depression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So what are some strategies? Let's start with the parents and grandparents listening. It's always easy to fix other people's problems than your own. I'm an expert at that, by the way.
Yeah.
So your kiddo suddenly doesn't want to go to school. It's only day four or whatever, but they don't want to go, or they are, you know, there's a reluctance that you see there.
Mm-hmm.
How do we deal with that?
Well,
I guess it's different for a first grader than a junior
in high school. I think being curious and asking about the feelings that they're having about school and what might be making them nervous. There's different things that you can do to help them with processing that. Books are a really big thing, because then you can kind of relate to the characters of the books, and they can see someone else who might be having those same struggles as them, and you can talk about the characters in the book and how they might relate to them. There's different, you know, mindfulness, breathing strategies that you can work with them. Talking to them about the school supports that they have if they're struggling at school, and communicating with those school supports too if you know that you're having, or your student is having, issues, so that they can be more aware and know when they need to step in.
There's big milestones too. It's different for every school district, but we're talking to a large audience here. You know, when you go to sixth grade in Quincy, you go to the junior high building, which is vast. Then you go to high school. That's a big change too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're still with some of the same people, but now you're thrust into an ever bigger pool.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happens when you go from elementary school to middle school to junior high to senior high on any level.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these small towns, it's even the same building, but it's a different wing, or it's a different experience, or different things are expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes maybe something happened over the summer and you got in a girl fight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, teenage girls were the meanest, and I was the meanest of the mean. I'd look at the movie Mean Girls and go, that's nothing. But this is why it's really critical that parents keep a line of communication open, because it gets harder and harder. The young ones can't express what they're feeling.
Yeah.
The older ones can, but they don't want to tell you.
Yeah. And I think being proactive instead of reactive. So if you're noticing, like, maybe you're getting anxious about your student returning to school, then I guarantee your student's probably anxious too. So being able to show them, like, the school layout, going to those meet the teacher nights so they can get familiar with their school environment, and the expectations at school, those kind of things help with that first day anxiety.
I love Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. I bring him up all the time. He had the back to school issue this weekend. I watched it. When we do something new, let's talk about what we'll do. So Mama Tiger was explaining to him what was going to happen when he went to school. It was so cute, because he was afraid they wouldn't have his favorite red block at school. So he took his red block in his book bag, and he didn't think they'd have a music. So he took his drum, and he was afraid there wouldn't be books. So he took his book, and he took his stuffy, and he was lugging this real heavy, you know, thing around. And then eventually, you know, it's like, Mom, I don't need this. Mom, I don't need this. I have this here. Part of the security of leaving home, even when you're 16 or 17 and you're going off now, it's like, do I have everything I need? What am I going to confront? What's going to be different this year? Maybe you start a new club, or maybe you're not picked for the school musical, or maybe you didn't make varsity. You know, there's some disappointments, or maybe you found out, I've got to take chemistry. I have to have it for for what I want to be when I grow up. But, oh, man, I'm struggling so hard. I'm just like Mary Griffith, who missed 4 days of class, and I'm never going to make it. I could have been a neuro surgeon, by the way, if it hadn't been for that cold. So I've lived with that the rest of my life. But so what are some coping mechanisms that you can concretely give parents for children?
Well, there's different things that you can do. So leaving, like, a family picture in your book bag if they're having some separation anxiety related issues, or Even like keeping a favorite stuffy in their book bag, or making like bracelets with them, and you wear one and they wear one, and then you can look at your bracelet and think of each other throughout the day. Or even I've had some parents where you draw a heart on your hand and that's the hug button. So you both have hearts, and then it sends, every time you press the hug button, it sends a hug to the other person. Things like that.
It's like the bat call. I need a hug. You press the button, yes, and you immediately, yes, feel mom, mm-hmm, hugging you.
Warm, fuzzy
feelings.
I was
thinking for a teenager, you could put a picture of the brand new car you're going to buy them if they get straight A's,
yes,
or whatever, although that may, mm-hmm, lead to more anxiety. Mm-hmm. Or just how about 100% attendance?
Yeah.
Do the best, whatever you can. So as we learn to cope, and we start learning to cope when we're children, we take these coping skills then with us all the, mm-hmm, way through adulthood. You mentioned the young adults. You know, talk about that, because that's a very awkward age.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I didn't have my mommy and, mm-hmm, I got sick. Well, you know, come on, you're 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm independent. I don't need my mommy, except,
yeah,
when I needed her. And then she wasn't there, and she couldn't be there. I was away at college. So there, it's a strange thing. It's,
uh-huh,
kind of like, you know, your 14-year-old son will probably give you a hug inside the confines of the house when nobody's looking, but does not want to even acknowledge your presence,
mm-hmm,
in, at, you know, the mall or the shopping center or the skate park. For God's sake, if you come to pick him up, it's like, oh no,
mm-hmm,
I don't know who this woman is, but it's my Uber driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't want anyone to know that's my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that awkward age, because 18 to 22, they're off in college. They're,
mm-hmm,
they're becoming more independent, but they still have anxieties and problems, and may want to talk to you about it.
But right.
Some of the things they're having anxiety about, they may not want mom and dad to know they're doing.
Yeah. And some of it, like when we have anxiety, we struggle with problem solving and we think like the worst case scenario. So some
well,
of it.
I'm good at that.
Yeah. Some of like the young adults I see, I'm like, okay, let's come up with the worst case scenario that would happen. And then we problem solve through that. So sometimes it's just thinking of like what your options are, what your resources are, and what you can use if those things come up.
Okay. So looking for the problem solving and trying not to go to the worst case scenario. But once you get that outlined and then you realize that's probably not going to happen,
mm-hmm,
then you can also struggle and try to figure out the best case scenario,
yeah. Yeah.
Which is that sometimes every change, every problem is an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a level of maturity that many people don't have when they're 18 to 22,
mm-hmm,
years old, because they might think they've had something hard in their life, but they really haven't truly.
Mm-hmm.
And so this may be a first test.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be true if you're 40 years old, if you've,
mm-hmm,
had a pretty easy life and nothing bad has happened to you,
mm-hmm,
having, you know, a spouse die or parents pass away or a child that gets arrested or something can cause a great deal of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So let's bring that into now to the average adult mode.
Mm-hmm.
This mindfulness and everything. They're starting this in school systems, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so interesting because yoga used to be kind of a religious practice.
Mm-hmm.
Now to make it okay, we've taken all the religious connotation out of yoga and turned it into just an exercise,
mm-hmm,
form, which is okay. You know, I mean, whatever works for you. But talk a little bit about adults who, and also some medications that might be available for anxiety, because I think a lot of times we want to go it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Depression is caused a lot by a chemical imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
Is anxiety also caused by a chemical imbalance?
It can be.
It can be.
Yeah. I think it's sometimes hard to decipher, and it just depends on the person and what they're experiencing, what works for them.
Okay. So that you'd have to go to a medical doctor for.
Correct.
Cornerstone,
yes,
you're not going to be.
Right.
You're going to do talk therapy and do some mindfulness and do some kind of things like that.
Yes.
Do you find that most people wait until they're almost in a crisis with anxiety before they seek professional help? I mean,
well, I think that happens in a variety of different scenarios. Couples counseling.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
You know, you wait till.
Yeah, it's but and
the fire started and you're sitting there and the house is all burned down and
yeah.
You've got like the sink and a charred out refrigerator left.
Yeah.
And you're sitting in the basement because you both fell through the first floor into the ash pile downstairs, and then
uh-huh.
you say, maybe we need some help.
Yes.
So early intervention, whether it's anxiety, depression, marital rifts, family counseling if you're having trouble with teenagers. The earlier you get help, the better.
Yeah, it's always better to be proactive rather than reactive.
So what are some proactive things that adults can do to ward off, frankly, needing professional intervention? Because the truth of the matter is anxiety, unless it's chronic and really disabling, happens to all of us maybe mm-hmm. three times a day. Mm-hmm. You know, that the thing, you know, why do you get up and go to work in the morning? You have mm-hmm. a motivation because you want the reward.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't want the bad, you know, I don't have any money if I don't go to work. You either want the reward or, you know, or you don't want the unreward, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, same way with anxiety. There's probably a lot of low-grade anxiety that people can work their way out of using mm-hmm. their common logical mind, but they have to get in their common logical mind mm-hmm. because that's not where anxiety lives, is
mm-hmm.
it?
No, and that goes back to like self-regulation and being able to use those mindfulness interventions. So whether it's yoga or deep breathing interventions, there's a lot of different apps out now for different mindfulness skills, deep breathing exercises, so that you can get into the logical side of your brain to start rationalizing through a lot of those problems. Using supports and being able to talk to other people about your anxiety, whether it be a friend, a therapist, all those things help.
Finding someone who's going through a similar circumstance,
mm-hmm.
Whether they're a close personal friend or not,
mm-hmm.
Is very helpful. Mm-hmm. Because, and sometimes if you have really very personal problems, you don't necessarily want to tell your close personal mm-hmm. friend. You'd rather tell a stranger almost, mm-hmm. like somebody you met in a chat group almost. You'd rather unload to them rather than, you know, bare your soul to somebody that you have. It's so funny. You mentioned, you know, worst case scenario. They have an app called Calm. I'm sure it costs money, but they mm-hmm. advertise that on TV. And the other day I was, I was doing some housework and I heard this sound of running water. And of course my immediate scenario was a pipe has burst. My whole home will be underwater 3 feet deep, you know, mm-hmm. in a matter of minutes. I came running into the living room and no, it was just the Calm app with the gentle waterfall and the rain falling. So that Calm app wouldn't work for me. My mind would immediately go to broken pipe. But I laughed. I said to myself, how amusing.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be like showing you how calm you can be. And if you get this app, it'll teach you how to be even calmer. And the ad for it was 15 seconds of water running, and I panicked. So I probably wouldn't put the water app on
my
phone.
Might not be the one for you.
Maybe the wind rustling through the trees, and then I think a tornado was good. You know, whatever would happen, I would probably find the worst case scenario.
Uh-huh.
So the bottom line is, if people are suffering from retractable, ongoing anxiety, they mm-hmm. need to get some professional help.
Mm-hmm.
All they do is call Cornerstone?
Yeah.
Okay. Give us our number. Do you know the number? You never call yourself, do you?
No, I don't.
Courtney,
you know, usually Drew has it out, so.
I don't even think Melissa knows
it's
the number.
223.
217.
217.
8254.
I was wrong on the 223.
You handle that anxiety ridden moment very well. So you have a support group and you talk it through.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in. Coming up, the Peanut Man is here, Fred Knothold. But first, we have to head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. This report brought to you by Rex Battery. Fred Knothold joins me, and he's with the Kiwanis Club, the Gem City Breakfast Kiwanis Club, and they have their annual Peanut Day coming up on August 30th. And since the early 1900s, the Quincy Kiwanis Clubs have raised and given out more than $2 million to kids in our area. And a big part of that, of course, is the Peanut Day collection. So welcome, Fred Knothold. Glad to have you here.
Well, good morning, Mary. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having us on.
Well, we're gonna talk about peanuts and the money that you raise, what it goes to. But these are name brand Planters peanuts. You're going to see folks wearing a very distinctive colored, like yellow vest, right?
Yellow vest, that's right, with our logo and Gem City Breakfast Kiwanis on the back. So we'll be around this Friday. It's coming up early Friday the 30th. We'll be at five different locations at Hardee's on 30th and Broadway, and Farm and Home Supply at allows us to be there at both doors, and at Neiman Foods on North 24th Street at both doors. So I said five locations. It's actually three locations, but five different entrances.
Okay, so Neiman's, Hardee's, and Farm and Home.
Right.
And so, you know, you will have a chance to go to those places. You're under no obligation, of course, to give any money. You never are. It's a free will solicitation. But you will see the bright yellow vest, and you will know that you're giving your money to the right people and for a good cause. And in exchange, they're going to give you a bag of peanuts. Now, again, it's just a token thank you for your donation. Why peanuts? How did this all start?
Well, it's been a national deal that started way back in the early 1900s. I know I'm old, but I'm not old enough
to
know
probably
that.
Probably a Georgia Kiwanian had a whole lot of peanuts he was trying to get rid of, and
could have been.
Started.
Well, that could have been.
But,
that's
you know, Girl Scout
good
cookies
idea.
Started because a department store in Philadelphia wanted to show how well their oven worked. So they got a Girl Scout troop to come and bake cookies right there in the window and show everybody how evenly the cookies turned out. And that started the whole Girl Scout cookie sale. So whoever started the peanut sale...
Could have been the same thing, right?
It's going strong today.
That's right. You got a lot of peanuts and nowhere to go.
nowhere to go. So let's raise some money.
That's
for
right.
Kids. So what? You know, you've got a one-day event. You've got a chance, you know, at three different retailers for people to give money. How big a deal is this every year?
Well, it's a big deal. It's a fundraiser, money raiser for us. So we do have the funds to pass out to the local children organizations. We do that usually in the spring of every year. We have Sammy Fun, or the Sammy Golf Tournament, which comes up in October, which is a money maker. Half of the money goes to the Sammy Foundations, and the other half goes into the pot for the kids in the spring. If you have a need, just write us a little note, and we'll put you in the file, and we have a crew that goes through and checks it all out and finds out what's needed, how much money we have to give, and try to give everybody what they want or what they need.
Okay, so it's basically you give it out based on people that apply for these different grants, and they have to help children, and they have to have a reasonable cause. And you talk about the money that goes to different things. Everything from, I know you've helped build parks in our community. You just do a variety of things. Can you name like maybe the top three projects you're hoping maybe you can fund in the coming
one of the biggest ones that we already have funded is the playground at Lincoln Park. We went in with the Golden K and Noon Kiwanis Clubs, the three of us, raised a lot of funds to build that, and then a shelter house and restroom facilities on top of that. Otherwise, we do a lot of other things for the community. We pick up trash out on the highway from KC all the way out to 48th Street curve. We do a lot of different things. Early childhood, we've read there for a number of years to the kids, and it's really anything that has to do with children we try to be involved with.
And that is great because the kids love it when a different reader comes to their classroom. So you'll see them out this Friday at Farm and Home. About what time are you starting in the morning? What time are you ending in the afternoon?
Well, we're going to start at Hardee's at 6 a.m. because there's a lot of breakfast people to stop by there and get their breakfast
and coffee.
That's where
all the world's problems are solved. I didn't know if you knew that, but the Hardee's at 30th and Broadway is second only to the U.N.
Good.
Solving problems, yes.
And it's a lot closer.
It's a lot closer than going to New York.
Right. We start there at 6, and we'll run that till about 2 in the afternoon, because after that it slows down enough. Mm-hmm. And at the Farm and Home and at Neiman's, we're from 7 to 5 in both locations.
So a great chance for folks to get out there. I do have some other things I want to ask you about, but are we done with peanuts?
We're never done with peanuts.
What is the traditional donation that people get? A fiver? What do you expect people to give you when you give them a bag of peanuts?
Well, anything will do. It all adds up. A lot of people take and clean out their cup holder in the car and throw that in. But it doesn't make any difference anywhere from whatever you have in the change to. We've had as high as a $50 donation for the peanut day at those locations. So
fantastic. So give what you can.
Yeah, you just put it all together and hope for the best, and we'll be able to. You can also send it. You know, a lot of people don't carry a lot of cash anymore.
No. My brother couldn't even go to a lemonade stand the other day. I said, keep a $5 bill in your car, tucked away in your secret compartment, because, yeah, the kid doesn't take Venmo at the lemonade stand.
Right. Well, we do.
We do.
We do take Venmo. Yeah.
Gym City Breakfast Kiwanis do take Venmo.
That's right. It's Gym City / Breakfast Kiwanis .com via Venmo, or you can send a check to Gym City Kiwanis Foundation for the Peanut Fundraiser. And checks can be mailed to P.O. Box 178-62306. And we accept money in any form.
Okay. Okay. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Fred doesn't know. I'm going to brief him during the commercial. I'm going to ask him about something that I've been dying to talk to him about ever since he came in to make the appointment to be on the Peanut Day Show. So we'll see if he'll be willing to share this story with us when we come back. Here's a chance for you. Listen to this next commercial. It's a free public service announcement. If you're an American businesswoman out there, you ought to be part of the American Business Women's Association. I am. We've got our next meeting coming up September 5th, so listen up and you can be involved. Well, ever since Fred and I crossed paths a couple of months ago, and I'd just gotten back from San Jose, California on my vacation, and Fred said he lived out there on the Shamrock Ranch, right?
That's correct.
So I want you to tell me some Shamrock Ranch stories. What was it like back in the days of the Wild Wild West out there in the agricultural growing region, the salad bowl, as they call it,
right,
in California?
Well, Shamrock Ranch was a great experience for me in growing up, especially being young and close to the ocean. We were only about a half a mile from the ocean, right off of Highway 1, and it was really a wonderful place to grow up. I was born in San Francisco, but my parents had moved back down to, or got a job down in what was called Pedro Valley back in those days. It's Pacifica mostly now. I haven't been out there in a while, but I went out in the middle of the 90s, and it really had changed dramatically from artichoke fields and part of the Pacific Coast Mountains to houses everywhere.
That is the big change, isn't it?
I
mean, you know, our population is growing, and not only that, but what we expect as a living domicile is growing.
It is.
You know, nobody wants to live in a 1,000-square-foot home anymore, which there are numerous 1,000-square-foot homes in Quincy. 1,500 square feet used to be kind of, hey, you're getting up there. Now people are starting with 5,000, and that's like a minimum, and it's amazing what we expect. But just to see, it's still our agricultural bread-and-butter land. But
right, just not in that area, that close to the ocean. It's all housing.
Yeah. If it's got a view, it's no longer being used to grow artichokes and strawberries and lettuce, right?
I wasn't sure whether, you know, the ranch would still be there after seeing all of the housing, and I stopped by the Chamber of Commerce and asked them if, just by chance, if anybody knew about that. And, oh, yeah, it's still there. So I drove there, and it was exactly as I remembered it. They held off in selling. People been after them to sell it and to develop it into homes and what have you. And it probably has by now, but back in the mid-90s, it was still what I remembered. And they had just converted it into a kennel and a horse area where they would kennel dogs and cats and what have you, and horses also.
So it had changed because more and more people were living out there. It was changing its business model to accommodate wealthier people who traveled and couldn't take care of their animals all the time or needed a place to stable horses.
Yeah, back in the day, they raised chickens and turkeys and hogs and cattle, and had a little store on the ranch that they would sell those products to. And
the original farmer's market.
Right, and my mother ran that, and my dad was a foreman of the ranch, and I kind of had the free reign of wherever, and all they do is told me to stay away from the ocean, which, you know, who listens? So It was a great place to grow up. I would really love to go back again and see how it is, but I remember and what I saw in the mid-90s is quite different, except for the ranch itself.
Well, it was still there at least, so right. You can be grateful for that. Who knows? We'll have to maybe try to call the Pacifica Chamber of Commerce and see.
And ask again.
And ask again. Fred Knothold, my guest today. And Fred, you know, it's so interesting. I've known you for many years, didn't know this story about your life. Born in San Francisco, moved down to the agricultural area, what is now Pacifica, California. How'd you get to Quincy?
Well, my parents were both from Quincy.
Oh, okay. Well, how'd they get to San Francisco?
Well, my dad had a sister that lived in San Francisco, and they moved out there to try to better themselves as far as employment's concerned. And so they moved out there, and then when I was starting the seventh grade, we moved back, and it was back in the day where the oldest child took care of their parents when they couldn't take care of themselves anymore, and my mother was the oldest child, and so we came back. I really didn't want to, but I didn't have much choice at that time.
Well, if I lived out there in that beautiful area, I don't think I'd want to either, except now I couldn't afford to live out there.
Well, that's
in that
true.
Beautiful area. It's so interesting when you hear people talk about how weird people in San Francisco are, or how strange everybody in California is. You didn't have anything to compare it to, but did you perceive it as, when you came to Quincy, you had something to compare it to? Was it a more freeing lifestyle out there? Were people more liberal out there? Or, I mean, what did you, I mean, besides not having an ocean and a farm to live on, which definitely would be a downer to come,
right.
Nothing wrong with Quincy, but nothing like moving from the ocean and a farm to come back to Quincy would be a downer.
Well, it was quite a shock when we first got here to the size of what I was used to out there. I mean, we were only 17 miles south of San Francisco, so it wasn't that you were far away. You could always go there. And
the big city was very available
right.
to you.
And obviously it wasn't near as liberal as it is now, and I don't remember ever seeing anybody sleeping on the street or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, in sixth grade, you weren't tuned into the whole political mindset of what was going on. No.
Thank God for that, yeah.
The carefree games
right.
of childhood.
Yeah.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad you came back. I mean, I wouldn't have known you if you'd lived
out
in California. But
the one thing that kind of stands out in coming back to Quincy when we came across the bridge, you know, my parents were telling me blah, blah, blah about Quincy and everything, and sign said Quincy population 41,200, and we don't have that in population now.
No.
which is amazing to me, and for that many years, and actually, of course, I guess a lot of us moved out around in.
Well, we're not growing. I mean, you can make a lot of excuses that it's now in the county, but the truth of the matter is, our population is declining. While the area you left, the population has exploded. There are good things and bad things in both.
I mean,
I would want to try to buy a home now in Pacifica, California, and I'm sure if your parents or you know, parents are gone, but if you wanted to buy the Shamrock Ranch, you do pretty well, Fred, but you couldn't do it.
I don't think that would be possible. No.
So the bottom line is things have changed dramatically, and, you know, it's you grow where God plants you. It's so interesting, though. How many fire extinguishers and welding kits do you think you could have sold if you were living in Pacifica, California? You think? Now, this is really serious.
Yeah.
If your trajectory of your life had been kind of the same, and you had the same occupation that you had in Quincy, which, of course, may not have happened, but let's just say it did happen, and you were doing what you were doing as a profession here all those years, would you be a millionaire?
Well, I don't think the welding supplies in Pacifica would really go very well. Maybe for contractors, but in building and houses, there's not a lot of welding done. Fire extinguishers may have been a different story there, or at least it should have been. Everybody should have one in their home or more, and that might have been a little bit better occupation out there than the welding supplies.
One thing's for sure, if you still had the land, of course, your family never owned the land. You were just the foreman on the land.
Right.
So there again, you know, it's interesting. Your parents went out there to improve themselves. You certainly had the gift of a wonderful childhood growing up in a rural community. You came back to Quincy, and you had a great career here. So, you know, you just never know. It's so hard to look back and say, what if? The road less traveled, or the branch,
right.
the branch, you know.
Well, the good Lord has his ways to which way you're going to go, and you just follow that.
Just follow that. You know, yeah. It would be really great if the people that owned the Shamrock Ranch, wouldn't it be great if suddenly there were no heirs out there, and they were sitting around the table, that family, talking and said, you know, the Knothold family used to work here, and we really liked them, and we liked that little boy Fred that grew up here. Why don't we just give him Shamrock Farm, Shamrock Acres.
Ranch, yeah.
Would you move out there again if you had Shamrock Acres?
I probably would, yeah.
Can I
go now?
Can I live in your small foreman's guest house and help with the horses?
Actually, the people that owned a first store in San Francisco, so they offered the money and that to buy it and to live there, and they didn't have any children, but they adopted a little girl before we left, and that's who I asked for when I went back
to
the chamber, and we went to the ranch and went into the office area and asked to see her, and said, well, she's really busy and she's in the back and we're not going to be able to, you know, do that. And I said, well, you just do me a favor, just tell her who's here, just give her my name and see. She may not even remember because she was pretty young, and she did remember and come out just bam like that and gave us a tour of the ranch and talked, and it was really good catching up with her and what was going on.
And the moral of the story is, if they think you're a traveling salesman, the boss is always busy.
That's
if
right.
If you're a childhood friend, the boss always comes out and gives you a hug.
That's right.
That is so true. Fred, thank you for sharing that story. You shared it off air with me, and I thought that is an interesting story because there again, so many people are moving out to California now.
Right.
Now the diaspora is starting the other way around because nobody can afford to live out there. I think I shared with you that a one-bedroom studio apartment, just basically a studio apartment in Palo Alto, which is near Stanford University,
right.
$5,250. The average
That's
person
crazy.
Cannot yeah. afford to live in California, so it is becoming even more rarefied. The billionaires and millionaires are doing great. But what about the people who make your hamburger? What about the people who clean your pool? Where are they going to live? And many of them, again, yeah. the homelessness issue out there is not a homeless issue like we have here in Quincy. It is primarily working people. Maybe right. both mom and dad are working, and the whole family still is
still
living in
homeless.
The car. Yeah, it's a totally different situation. But we won't let that ruin the happy memories of Shamrock Acres.
Well, San Francisco was beautiful in the day. Haven't been there in a long time.
It's still beautiful. Just don't, you know, you have to step
yeah.
over a few people, but it's still very yeah. beautiful. You know, it's like every other place. The pendulum swings.
Yep.
They'll get sick and tired of it after a while, and it'll all swing back. Thank you very much. Don't forget, folks, peanut days are coming up. I've got to get my donation to Fred. He already gave me my bag of peanuts, so we're going to make our donation, and we'll be back tomorrow to do it all again with the superintendent of the Quincy Public School System.